This sermon was recorded at Christ Church Overland Park, a congregation that seeks to be a people fully alive in God's kingdom.
Today's reading is from the book of 1 Timothy. Command those who are rich in this present world not to be arrogant, nor to put their hope in wealth, which is so uncertain, but to put their hope in God, who richly provides us with everything for our enjoyment. Command them to do good, to be rich in good deeds, and to be generous and willing to share. In this way, they will lay up treasures for themselves as a firm foundation for the coming age, so that they may take hold of the life that is truly life. The word of the Lord. Thanks be to God.
Well, good morning. It's good to be here. I've had a nasty cold this week, and it actually started this time last week. I feel much, much better, and I'm just hoping my voice will cooperate. So I'm trying to get through it. And do I sound normal? Yep. Kind of? Yeah? Okay. Oh, good. We'll see how long that lasts. Yeah. All right. This reading, 1 Timothy, that Matt read for us, 1 Timothy 6. Paul charges the rich, and I think it's important just to stop and say that that's us. By any world standard of measure, we are rich. He charges us to take hold of life, take hold of the life that is truly life. He's talking about the abundant life of Jesus. And one way that we do that is by being rich in good deeds. In other words, we should serve. We should serve generously. In fact, service is the way of life for everyone who is a follower of Jesus, which makes perfect sense because Jesus himself defined his own life in terms of service. The Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve, and to give his life as a ransom for many. Jesus taught his followers about service in both his deeds and his words. For example, one of Jesus' most well-known parables, the Good Samaritan. It gives us a very vivid picture of what it looks like to serve generously. And so I want us to dig into this story under three headings. We're going to ask three questions. What does Jesus teach about serving generously? How do we serve generously? And where do we get the motivation to serve generously? So let's start with what. What does Jesus teach us here about serving generously? The setting for this parable, I think, is really interesting. This teacher of the law, he's a religious scholar, and he comes to Jesus with a question. What must I do to inherit eternal life? I've been in vocational ministry for over 30 years, and that's your dream. Like, someone just comes to you, what must I do to have eternal life? It's never happened to me. But it's important to understand, and Luke makes it clear, that this guy isn't really interested in Jesus' opinion. Like, he's putting Jesus to the test. And what's the test? Well, people like this lawyer, they were very suspicious of Jesus, in part because he spent so much time with people that they considered sinners, people who were not completely obeying the law of God. And so when he asked Jesus this question, he's expecting an answer from Jesus that will weaken or cheapen the law. He suspects that Jesus doesn't really hold the law that he loves. He suspects that Jesus doesn't really hold the law in very high regard. But Jesus, unbeknownst to this lawyer, Jesus has really set a trap for him. He's come to test Jesus, but Jesus is really putting him to the test. Jesus comes back with a question. Well, what is written in the law? How do you read it? And the lawyer gave the expected answer. Most Jewish lawyers of that day, they summarized all of the Old Testament laws into two commands. Love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength, and love your neighbor as yourself. Does that sound familiar? Well, Jesus calls his bluff. Okay, you got that right. So just do that. There's the answer to your question. Just do that and you will live. Just love God with every fiber of your being. And love your neighbor as yourself, which does not mean have good feelings for your neighbor. That would be hard to do, but maybe kind of doable. Probably not for me, but maybe for you. It would be good. You could muster that up at least part of the time. But it means to meet the needs of your neighbor with all of the speed, joy, and power with which you meet your own needs. That's a little bit different. And at that point, the lawyer, he recognizes the emptiness of his legalism. The law shows us what is good and right. We should love God with everything. We should love our neighbor with all the attention that we love ourselves. And even though this lawyer has likely, on many occasions, he has likely taught that obeying the law is what leads to life, Jesus here just confronts him with the fallacy of that approach, and the lawyer feels it. And now he's kind of trying to backtrack, He's trying to lessen the burden that he has just put on himself. And so Luke makes it clear, he wants to justify himself. And he knows that he can't do it unless somehow he can more narrowly define who a neighbor is. It's like, well, if I can get this narrowed down enough, then maybe I got a shot at it. Maybe it's doable. And so he asks the question, well, who is my neighbor? And Jesus tells him a story. And the hero in this story is a Samaritan. And Jews despised Samaritans and vice versa. Samaritans were a group of people who lived in the northern part of Israel. At a point in Israel's history, the Assyrians came and invaded the northern part of Israel and conquered it. They took some of the Israelites back to Assyria, and they also transplanted Assyrians in that part of Israel. Well, over time, like hundreds of years, these Assyrians that were transplanted just started to intermarry with the Jews that remained there, and they formed the Samaritan people. And the Jews hated the Samaritans because they were sellouts. They were people that sold out and married into, the invading people. But in the story, the Samaritan is the hero. And so loving your neighbor, it means meeting the needs of the people who are around you, not the people that you like or the people who are like you. No, your neighbor, Jesus teaches us, is even your enemy. Your neighbor is anyone and everyone who is in need. And so Jesus' story here, it shows us the magnitude of what it means to serve and to serve generously. It's a service without limitations. It's costly and sacrificial. We don't ask questions that are trying to lessen our burden. You're like, well, who is it? Do I really like this person? Here's one we use. Do they really deserve help? How much will it cost? The Samaritan doesn't ask any of those questions. He helps his enemy at great cost, time, financially, risking his own reputation, even possibly risking his own life. that stretch of road from Jerusalem down to Jericho, it was called the Pass of Blood. And it was called that precisely because so many people were robbed, even murdered on this road. And so what if this whole thing is just a setup? Like, what if the robbers are still there and they're trying to bait someone in and that person's going to be their victim and they're going to beat them and rob them? So this guy's life might be on the line. So Jesus teaches us a lot here about what it means to serve and to serve generously. And how do we do it? How do we serve generously? That's our second question. You know, the priest and the Levite, they were headed right at the Samaritan. And by the way, it's important, you know, Jesus is a master storyteller. He makes sure to tell the story that they're going from Jerusalem to Jericho. And that's significant because it's a priest, it's a Levite, meaning they're not going to Jerusalem, they're not going to work. They're leaving work, they're going home. So they can't use that excuse. But they're headed right at this Samaritan, but they both just cross over to the other side of the road as if to say, well, you know, he's not really in my path. It's ludicrous. And Luke points out, they all see him. The priest saw the man. The Levite saw him. The Samaritan saw him. They all saw him. But here's what the priest and the Levite didn't do. They didn't really consider his needs. They didn't come close. They didn't look twice. They looked at him and just simply turned away. But the Samaritan looked at him and felt his misery, was filled with compassion. The Samaritan considered his condition, but the other two did not. They didn't have the time or whatever, the emotional energy, so they just look away. But not the Samaritan. He saw the man and kept looking. He focused on him and his need. He didn't look away. The Samaritan came close, but the others instead just went to the other side of the road. You know, there are many needs, far more than we could ever do anything about. But there are things that are really kind of right in our path. And we see them. And we know they're there. But it's easy for us to just kind of keep them at a distance, to look away and to move to the other side of the road. To serve generously, then we have to move toward those who are in need. And that means we have to get involved. Like, we're going to get dirty. It's going to be hard. Now, as I was thinking about this, I thought, you know, this morning, I want to help you see two specific needs that we have as a church. And I rarely do this, like, you know, hey, we have this pressing need. But I wanted to bring this to you because it's important. Tiffany Mills, our family life director, she is one of the best recruiters that I've ever known. She is amazing. But even Tiffany has found it difficult to get children's ministry back up to the levels that it needs to be since COVID. I mean, honestly, like from throughout our church, one of the things we've seen, the thing that is least back to normal is the amount of people who volunteer. For whatever reason, it's not back to normal. Tiffany still needs 22 people, and this is not every Sunday, but like over the course of a month, she needs 22 people for the preschool wing to be fully staffed. 9 at 9:45 and 13 at 11 o'clock. Jacob Vangen, our new student life director, he told me he needs several volunteers to be fully staffed. Now, I'm not like, we're not going to bring the kids up here and say like, look really pitiful and sad and, you know, this is not about manipulation. I'm just telling you, these are real needs. Our children, our students. You know, we vow in baptism, right? We make a vow in baptism. We vow to do everything in our power to help these persons in their life in Christ. And we all say, we will. Well, doesn't that at least include some of these basic things? I mean, I think it does. So I'm helping you to see these needs. They're real. They're there. And if you're interested in learning more, then just write it on your Connect card. I don't care what you write. Children's ministry, student life, you can figure it out. Just write it on your Connect card and drop it in the plate on the way out. And one of them will get in touch with you. But we have to see the need. And at that point, we have a decision. Do I look away like, you know, at the grocery store and you know you kind of made eye contact with that person, you know, but I'm just going to pretend I didn't see him? Or are you going to move toward the need? All right, let's end with our last question. Where do we get the motivation to serve generously? And I want to make it clear, what we're talking about here is not how do we form a habit of serving generously so it just comes naturally to us. That's a very important question. I'm talking about like what comes even before that. Like what even gets us going? Where does the want to come from? Because there has to be some want to before anything happens. So where does that motivation come from? And that's, I think, where we have to end. The motivation comes from gratitude. It comes from gratitude. To the degree that we are moved by what God has done for us, that is the degree to which our hearts will be moved to serve others. You know, this parable, it really is, I think, Jesus at his most brilliant, like when he, as a storyteller. You know, if Jesus had said to this lawyer, so there was a Jew who's walking along and he sees a hated Samaritan who's beaten up and lying on the ground. And he went and had compassion on him and took care of him, and so you should go and do likewise. If that's how he had told the story, then that would have just been simply a rule for this man to follow. And I don't think he probably would have been very inspired by that. But that's not what Jesus did. Jesus is trying to help this man feel something on a different level. Instead, he put the Jewish man on the ground and a Samaritan who's walking by. So where would the lawyer have placed himself in this story? Well, he's not going to make himself the Samaritan. He hates Samaritans. The problem is the Samaritan is the hero, and we always all want to be the hero of the story, right? But he can't be the hero because it's a Samaritan. He's the guy on the ground that is now left hoping that a hated Samaritan will help him. He's left a hope in a man that he would have absolutely hated had they met in different circumstances. He's left to hope that his enemy will actually show him mercy. So Jesus is, in essence, saying to this lawyer, what if you were near death and you were totally dependent upon the act of grace from an enemy? The Samaritan didn't owe the lawyer anything. In fact, the cultural norms would have dictated that the Samaritan just let the Jewish man die. And Jesus is in essence saying, what if you were on the ground and needed saving? And two of your Jewish brothers, they just walk right by. They go to the other side of the road. Now your only hope is in someone who owes you nothing. If the situation were reversed, you would not save him. But in an act of sheer grace, the hated Samaritan comes and saves you. And at great cost to himself. That's where the motivation comes from, to get us moving. Because you're not going to be able to serve generously until you have received, until you've received the ultimate act of service that was generously done for you. So Jesus turns this whole question around. Not who is my neighbor, but who has been a neighbor. You know, the story of the Bible, and the Bible is a very deep and complicated book, but it's also, when you boil it down, it can be very simple. You know, a little child shall lead them, right? And the simple message is, we were in the road. We were in need. And is God obligated to come to our rescue? No. He created us. He gave us everything. And we essentially said, nah, we don't need you. We'll take it from here. And quite honestly, the results have not been great. The world is full of so much pain and suffering. But Jesus came to us on the road. He saw us and had compassion. He considered our needs and came close. He didn't just risk his life for us. He gave his life for us. This is what Jesus did. He owed us nothing and gave us everything. When we receive this unbelievably generous act of service that Jesus has done for us, then it begins to change us. That's when the change begins. Our hearts begin to change. We become filled with gratitude. That's the place from which we begin to start seeing others and moving toward them rather than moving away from them. That's where the motivation comes from to start serving generously and giving ourselves away for the sake of others.